Let's just pray a minute, shall we? Our Lord, how good it is to be here, knowing that it has been ordained of God that we should be. And Lord, you know that you are in charge of our hearts. And I pray right now that you will direct in a very specific way our thoughts this afternoon, that we might learn from you, that we might be directed by you, and that you will instill in our hearts those things which we need and desire from you. Lord, just put all the jumbled things together, and may they come out just exactly what you want us to hear and think about together this afternoon. Thank you now that we know you're going to answer. We pray in Jesus' name. Well, it's really fun for me to be here, and I'm just delighted to get acquainted at least with most of you by faith, and I really do want to have opportunities to get acquainted with many of you more than just by faith. You know, lots of times I think we come to a Navigator conference and we're kind of afraid of everybody else, and we all kind of think that we're going to be compared, and we don't know exactly what to talk about when we get together with somebody, and so sometimes we're afraid to ask for personal time and all that. But I really, it's kind of a privilege just to get to know you, and not that you have any big problem you want to discuss, but just to get done. So I hope that we'll have that opportunity to see this week. One of my favorite cartoon characters is Peanuts, and I just loved all the little thingies that Paul Potter has drawn. But I'm always clipping Peanuts, and I think that Charles Schulz has real insight into human nature. And the following cartoon I've got to tell you about is just an absolute classic of what we want to talk about today. Peppermint Patty is walking along, and she says, "I don't know why I even think about it," when she's sitting under a tree. Chuck just doesn't seem to understand the girl's emotions. She's looking very disturbed. In fact, Chuck doesn't seem to understand girls at all. Chuck is hard to talk to because he doesn't understand life. This is all going on now. He doesn't understand laughing or crying. He doesn't understand love and silly talk and touching hands and things like that. He plays a lot of baseball, but I doubt if he even understands baseball. And by that time, she's at his house. Knock, 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 knock. And Charlie Brown comes out, pokes his head out the door, and she looks at him and she says, "I don't think you understand anything, Chuck." She walks away. And Chuck's standing there with a bewildered look on his face, you know, and he says, "I don't even understand what it is I don't understand." And, you know, I just wonder how many times our husbands have thought this exactly the same thing. They may not have said it in exactly those terms, but they probably will have thought, "I don't even understand what it is I don't understand." And yet, as someone beautifully said it, when Adam was lonely, God created for him not 10 friends, but 1 wife. And God created you for your husband to be a very special help and to be a very special friend to your sweetheart. And yet we run into roadblocks along the way. And I wonder how very often you have looked at your husband just in this last month and thought, "He's not listening. He's not really listening." And you thought, he isn't understanding what I'm saying. Or maybe you haven't even said it because you thought you were going to think that. And so you haven't even bothered to try. I've been married to a very wonderful man for almost 22 years now. How long have you been married, Ida?
3 years.
Anybody else beat me? How long? 25. Wonderful. And yet, you know, even after being married almost 22 years, there are very many surprising things about the man I've met. But in the last few years, I have at least begun to find out why he's so surprising to me. And this has been a great step, please. For instance, the other night, it's been a few weeks ago now, but Jack took me out to dinner. And I don't know about you, but we really make a practice of having dates. And I save up questions that I think are going to be really neat questions. And that will lead us into deep and philosophical conversations, you know? And so I store these up to wait until we have our date. So this night we went out, and we were almost through our meal, and I said, now, hi, I heard a really good question the other day. And I said, there's this couple that I heard about that were going to a marriage counselor for some problems in the marriage. And in order to really find out whether this couple was communicating, the marriage counselor said to the wife and then to the husband, now, as the other person, as your partner, I want you to tell me what you feel your strengths and your weaknesses are. Not as you think they are, but as you think your partner thinks they are. Okay? I bet you've got the lovely question. So I said, now, if you were me, what do you think I would say my strengths and my weaknesses are? Don't you think that's a nice question? And now, last night, Jack and I really do have good communication. And many, many times, this kind of a question really gets us into neat things. But this time, my sweetheart just looked at me, and he kind of gave two or three things off the top of his head, and he changed his Well, 4 years ago, if he had done this, my reaction would have been one of two things. I would have withdrawn and thought, he's not interested in really communicating with me. And if he's not really interested in communicating with me, why then he's really not interested in me. And if he's not really interested in me, of course, you know, this would be a fast process, but if he's not really interested in me, then he can't really love me the way I want him to love me. Now you laugh, but you think how often your processes have gone through that very thing. And then I would have been hurt, and I was withdrawn. Probably failed to communicate about anything that whole evening. Or I would have gotten mad. One of two things. But because I have been doing a great deal of research on this topic that I wanted to share with you a little bit today, I laughed. And I let him change the subject. You know, mentally inside, I shrugged my shoulders and smiled. I thought, okay, honey, if you want to change the subject, that's your prerogative. Because I'm discovering a little bit of what I should have learned years and years ago of how very important it is to understand the difference between a man and a woman. How they think, how they respond. And that particular thing that happened that night was simply this. It had nothing to do with Jack's love for me. I guess interest in our communicating. It had to do with the fact that Jack is a man and I'm a woman. And we'll explain what I mean by that in detail today. We sometimes, I think, get tired of, in one way, every article that comes out about your marriage, you read and you research and you think about. And if, you know, women are much more prone to talk about these things than men are. In fact, it was at overseas staff conference that I spoke to the wives on these husband-wife kind of things, and Jack was speaking to the same conference. He was speaking on ministry opportunities. I thought, that's typical of me. But the guys got after him, and they said, no, you got to give us this out of the picture. So that's when he developed the message that he's giving to your husband now. So, yeah, we'll do it. But this is not wrong, that we should give a great deal of our time and our thinking to our marriages. Even though sometimes this really does upset us. It kind of makes me laugh and yet cry when I saw a cartoon and of an irate wife standing over her husband, and he's reading the paper, and he's looking at her and he's saying, but do we have to save our marriage while I'm reading the sports page? And we really don't know what mother to laugh or cry at that. But we do a lot of the thinking. Cecil Osborne tells us, in a little book that I'll recommend later, that the wife has the primary responsibility for the climate in her home. This is true partly, he says, because women are more innately sensitive to persons and their needs, and partly because the home means more to the wife than it does to her husband. A woman has much more to gain from a good marriage and much more to lose from a bad one. She may resent this fact, but it's still an inescapable fact of life. Now, the reason for that, it isn't that the man doesn't love you just as much as you love him. And it isn't that he doesn't honor you. But the fact is that his world is much bigger than yours. Your world is the home, your children, ministry, opportunities somewhat. But your world is here. His world is up here. It encompasses this. But it's much bigger. God meant it that way. And we don't want to fight it, what God meant to be, but we have to realize it. Because of that, God gave you an imagination, a godly imagination, and the ability to think through on many of these aspects of marriage that your husband may not have time to do. That's not wrong. That's the way God made it. Cecil Osborne also says that a perceptive wife, anxious to express love by meeting the needs of her husband, will try to discover whether she has grown up with some misconception about male needs. And then discovering that most of us have an awful lot of misconception about men's needs and about men. Proverbs 24, verse 3 says, "By wisdom a house is built, and by understanding, it is established." But most of us lack much wisdom in this area, and most of us lack much understanding. God says in Ephesians 4:32, and this is the Phillips translation, "Be kind to one another. Be understanding. Be as ready to forgive others as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you." Three wonderful, very important things in marriage here. Kindness. You know, I think we're more kind to strangers than we are to husbands. Many times we wouldn't talk to strangers like we do to our husbands. Kindness, understanding, and forgiveness. Someone has once said that a good marriage was simply the union of two awful good forgivers. And you might add awful good forgetters. Because forgiveness is really forgetting and not bringing up the past. Two awful good forgivers. My mother used to say, "Honey, if you can't forgive a man at least 20 times a day, don't marry him." And that was pretty good advice. Hasn't really been that bad. But awful good forgivers. Another person has said, "A long life is barely enough for a man and a woman to understand each other. And to be understood is to love. The man who understands one woman is qualified to understand pretty well everything." And yeah, you might reverse that. The woman who understands one man is qualified to understand pretty well everything. But of course, this takes much prayer. And gals, it takes work. A good marriage takes an awful lot of work. But it's worth it. A scathing article by Elsie Robinson puts it this way. What are your chances of a happy marriage? Practically nil. Unless you're willing to work at it as the greatest job of your life, and not one you'll desert whenever you get your hair rumpled. Do I advise you to marry? I do. Provided you're ready to face the works. If you want a kitty game, buy yourself a flock of toy blocks. But if you can face marriage as men and women, if you can concentrate all you have of vision and courage, tenderness and loyalty and burning faith, then and only then will you have the right to put your hand in God's and say, "I too will work with you in marriage." It is needed. Because men and women are so awfully different. I'm going to keep pounding away at that because if you don't get anything else, I want you to get a few facts of this. It'll revolutionize your life. really well. In fact, it was so funny. Jack spoke at this, as I said, overseas. And some of you met Hert Sonneval. I'm not saying that right, but he's a Dutch fellow from that works with navigators overseas. And when he came over here, he got up and was talking. He says, "Hey, you know, Jack spoke to us, and I've been married 10 years, and you know what he said revolutionized my marriage." And all of us were sitting there, "What in the world did Jack say that revolutionized your marriage?" And then he went on and says, "You know what I discovered? I discovered that men and women are different." And I got so tickled. But he hadn't ever really thought about it. See, that's what the Bible means by be understanding. It takes God's wisdom to do that. God's wisdom. That's why it takes a lot of prayer. But God wants us to really understand our husband. There's a humorous little article. I think Jack's going to read this to the guys, too. But, you know, when he reads this to men, I've heard him on tape, they laugh at all the different places than you do. It's one of the differences. I'm going to read it to you. It's worth in total. It's from The Good Housekeeping, and it's called How to Tell a Man from a Woman. Now, as I read this, really think about it, because this has a lot of insight as well as being humorous. What is a man? A man is a creature of superlative intelligence who can understand the principle of jet propulsion, the pyramutual betting system, and the Dow Jones average. But he can't figure out how to fold a baby's diaper. He can't understand the rules for Monopoly, and he can't grasp the basic theory of the hook and eye. A man has a remarkably retentive memory. He can recall the score of the Army-Navy game in 48, the electoral votes the Republicans won in the last election, and the gas mileage of his first car. But he can't remember what size socks he wears, the ages of his children, or the name of that old Richard Rogers number that his wife refers to as awesome. And what is a woman? A woman is a rattle brain who can't read a slide rule, can't follow a road map, and is vague about the make and model of the car she drives. But she can recall in vivid detail the yellow organdy dress she wore to her high school prom. And she can mentally multiply 16 people by 2.5 cheese canopies each while she's cooking beef stroganoff, ironing a blouse, helping one child compose a letter to Santa Claus, and listening to another pass a scale from the piano. A man has astounding manual dexterity. He can light a match with his fingernail. He can entangle a hopelessly snarled fishing line. He can repair a light cord, fix a carburetor, operate a power saw, and park a 17-foot car in a 16-foot parking place. Woman can't do anything like that. But she can hang up a bath towel so that the monogram is right side out and precisely centered. She can unjam a stuffed zipper. She can construct a pin curl and remove a sliver and balance a plate of food on her lap. A man is decisive. He can make instantaneous decisions about mergers and advertising campaigns, cutbacks in production, and million-dollar bond issues. But he has to appeal to his wife, that little muddlehead who can't decide on how much to tip a bellboy, to help him decide which necktie to wear with his blue suit and what to send his mother for her birthday. Faced with a continental menu, he shrugs helplessly and asks, "Honey, do I like beef bourguignon?" A man is stoical about thunderstorms and rattlesnakes and spiders. He is fearless about guns and one-engine planes, and he'd give his eye teeth to be an astronaut. He has tremendous physical stamina and thinks it's great fun to spend all day in a cold duck blind. A woman is a weak, timorous creature who lies awake hearing strange noises after reading a news bulletin that a psychopathic killer has escaped from a prison 1,500 miles away. But she doesn't quail in terror from a new baby. She'll brave the rigors of an August white sale, and she has an adventurous attitude towards the unidentifiable hors d'oeuvre. When she doesn't feel well, she does a very courageous thing. She goes to a doctor. A man has quick reflexes and keenly developed eyesight and hearing. He can keep track of the ball at a football game. He can detect an engine knock that is inaudible to the feminine ear. But he can't hear a baby crying for its bottle in the middle of the night. And he can't use the telephone if a child is banging two pot lids together in the next room. Isn't that true? man has great presence of mind in a crisis. He is a mountain of strength in a hurricane. He keeps his head when passing a truck at 60 miles an hour. He has a calm, philosophic attitude about permanents that turn out frizzy and ovens that go in the blink 2 hours before a dinner party. But he loses his head in the maternity ward, becomes a bundle of nerves during spring house cleaning, and is inconsolable when his golf game goes sour. Men are practical, hard-headed realists, quite unlike women who are notoriously childlike when it comes to anything concerning money. With paper, pencil, and patient logic, a man can prove the folly of transferring a savings account from one bank to another in order to get a $3.95 set of steak knives absolutely free. But a man has implicit faith in hot market tips, and he can use the same paper and pencil to prove that buying a new car is cheaper in the long run than getting two new tires for the old car. A man has a sixth sense that enables him to find his way through the cloverleaf, under the overpass, over a viaduct, across the bridge, and straight east to the airport without making a single wrong turn, in ample time to meet the 10:35 in Seattle. A woman has a sixth sense that prompts her to keep telling him, "George, I have a funny feeling that we're headed in the wrong direction." But a woman can find the adhesive tape in the medicine cabinet, and she has an uncanny prophetic sense that tells her when to arrive at a dinner party. All in all, a man is absolutely indispensable. He is brilliant, resourceful, brave, strong, steady, and a rock to lean upon. But it is utter helplessness that's his greatest asset, because it gives his wife, that little flutter brain who can't open a jar of pickles, that certain knowledge that she is indispensable, and he couldn't get along without her. And indeed, he couldn't. Come to think of it, this isn't such a bad state of affairs. You know, there's so much truth to that article. And yet, you see, in a little book called The Essence of Marriage, which is a good one for you to jot down some of these book titles and make, I hope that if I do nothing else today, it will start you to do some research on the subject that we're discussing. The Essence of Marriage by Fritzley, F-R-I-T-Z-L-E, I think. And it's his Amazon publication. You can get it at most Christian bookstores. And he says, if a man believes that a woman will react to any situation the same way he does, and if she reacts differently, he thinks there's something wrong with her. If a wife has been taught that men are just the same as women, and her husband turns out to be different, then she thinks he has a bad disposition. And since it is unreasonable for him to do other than what everyone else would do under the same circumstances, she tries to reform him, or he tries to reform her. If, on the contrary, they had both started with the assumption, which is true, that the two sexes will react differently to everything under the sun, then each would have spent more time studying the other's peculiarities, and they would have more fun and less suffering. Now, just, you know, mark this in your brain, ladies. God made us different, contrary to what women's lips say. God made us different. It would really be terrible if you were the same, because then you wouldn't be stronger as a couple. You see, our ability to see three-dimensionally is dependent on the fact that we have two eyes that see things from a slightly different point of view. Do you realize that? If you close one eye, you see everything in flat. You have no depth perception with one eye. But the two eyes help us to see things in the round. Gives us depth perception. I think that's just a beautiful picture of the way that God made us differently, so that life would be in the round, fuller, better, more wonderful. So you see, our job is not to try to be, to think like men, or to become like our husband, but to understand them and to mutually help one another, and, ladies, to accept them. Now, we could exemplify this difference in 100 different ways, but let me just give you a couple. If a couple comes over to your house for dinner, And the man asked you both, "Where did you get this meat?" Your husband would probably say, "At the A&P." You will say, "Why? What's wrong with it? Why?" Because you take things personal. You are a personal person, and you take things personal. Now, parenthetically, let me say this. Of course, we're talking in generalities here. I realize that your husband may not fit into all of these man characteristics, and you might not fit into all these women. Don't let it throw you. We are talking generally. And there'll be many exceptions to what we're talking about, but of course, in speaking, you've got to take the general. If I say to you, or if your husband came home and looked at you, and you looked pretty beat, and he said, "Oh, honey, you've been working hard all week. You've been cooking and cleaning and taking care of the children. Tonight I'm going to take you out for a good dinner." What would you think? Now, see, 90% of you got that. 90% of you got good dinner? What have I been serving him all week? Now, if I said that to the husband, and I have done this on occasion, not to a lot of husbands, because I don't talk to husbands, but to a man here and there, they don't get it. 90% of them would think, "Oh, that'd be a marvelous thing to say to my wife." And you could be hurt over a little thing like that, even though you would tell yourself, "He doesn't mean it, he doesn't mean it." And he doesn't mean it. Why? You take everything personal. You can't help it, but there are some things that you can work on as God gives you the understanding. And to realize that, "Oh yes, I did take that personal. He didn't mean it that way." And so I'm either going to ask him, "How'd you mean that anyhow?" And keep the channel clear. Or else I'm going to forget it, knowing that he didn't mean it. And I'm going to turn it over to God. One of our friends overseas was newly married, and she bought a new dress, and she brought it home, and she said, "How do you like it, honey?" And her husband said, "I like it." And she took it back. And she bought another one, and she brought it home, and she says, "Well, how do you like this one?" And he said, "Well, it's okay, but I like the first one better." Well, she was devastated. But she really didn't think he liked either one of them. Why? Because he did not respond the way she thought he ought to respond, or that another woman would respond. See, if Audrey says, "How do you like my dress?" What do I have to say? If I look at Audrey and say, "I like it," she thinks she hates it. Chances are I would. See, but I have to say to Audrey, "Oh, that looks so cute on you. That's a neat color, Audrey, and it's, you know, and I really got to convince her that I like her dress." We have schooled ourselves to do this because we're personal and we read into everything. We're talking things. But to realize that a man says what he thinks, and accepting that fact, that he says what he thinks, he says, "I like it," but he likes it. Let's let go of that. But just that little thing will save you buckets of tears, believe me. Because I've cried buckets of tears over this. See, I had it all in my mind when Jack would come home that I would say this, and then he would say that, and I had all the tone of voice even planned out. And then I would say this. Well, then he came home, and I said this, and he didn't say the first thing I could. Well, now, how many of you, honestly, now, have had that very same thing happen? And what do? You think he doesn't understand you? You think he's not sensitive to your moods? And then it boils down to this love issue. He doesn't love me as much as I want him to love me, or as much as I love him. All it boils down to that, if you really aren't. And that's too bad. It is simply a fact that he is being what God intended him to be. A man. I'm glad. Mm-hmm. And you're being a woman. And he's glad. As he learns to understand you. And of course, this is part of your job. Help him understand you. Don't ever give up. You're more articulate in some things, and you can help him in that. A man is basically a logical, rational creature. A female is basically an emotional creature. This does not mean that a man does not have emotions, nor does it mean that a woman does not have logic. However, feminine logic differs from masculine logic. I'm sure you know that. And the basic trait which they possess dominates by far the sexes. There is no superior or inferior sex. The sexes are not equal, they are equivalent. Of equal value, but they are different because they have different roles to fulfill. Marriage is a complementation of a man and a woman. If men and women were the same, it would be impossible for them to complement. Further, if the sexes were the same, we would really never have marriages because there'd be no fusion to. And that's what brings strength into your marriage. And yet the very thing that we really, that appeal to us lots of times before we're married are the things that make us frustrated after that. And lots of times it boils right down to this very same thing. Now let's get real specific. A man, I'm going to skip over a lot of this and give you a chance to ask questions. You can tell I've got lots of material. A man basically is objective, and a lot hinges on that very thing. A woman basically is subjective. A man sees the overall picture. A woman sees in detail. That really is why, ladies, you can be stirring the soup, talking to a friend on the telephone, listening to your girl practice, and you know, you can do five things at once. A man goes crazy trying to do that. Well, now you might get irritated because, you know, he can't take it. But he really can't. He sees in the overall broader picture, he sees objectively, and God made you to think in detail, to be a mother, to fulfill all those varying roles that you have to as a wife and a mother. But you see, because you think in detail and because he thinks in this broader picture, it boils down to many times you think that he's not interested in what you have to say. Because you want to tell him all the little details. And suddenly you find his eyes getting glassy. And you realize that you've lost him. That he is not interested in what you're saying. Well, now, he has to learn, of course, that sometimes you need to explain in detail. And he has to work on that aspect of it. But you have to work on the fact of leaving out some of those details. And not worrying about it, but trying to tell him the overall picture and explaining yourself to him. You see, because you're personal and because you think in detail, you want to dissect feelings. You want to get way in, and you know what you want to do. Talk about all the little ins and outs of the situation. He doesn't want to do that. It's really one reason why you need a woman friend that you can pray with and talk with. Not that she takes the place of in any manner of meaning. Of any part of what your husband is to you. But so you can talk about all these details and get it out. And of course, I just love the verse on 62:8, where it says, "Trust in the Lord at all times, you people. Pour out your heart before him." God is a refuge to you. And there are times we don't have friends. There are times when our husbands don't want to know the details. But God is interested in all the little details. And we can go to him, and we can get on our knees, and we can just tell him all about it from scratch. and we can pour out our hearts before Him. And He's a refuge, and He's a help to us. And what's more, He's the only one that can give us real, total understanding. Well, I was talking to a woman not long ago, who had been married much longer than I have, to whom they're a full-time Christian work. And really, they've got a lovely marriage. But she looked at me and she said, you know, my husband thinks that we really communicate well. He says, I don't think we communicate well at all. Now, what do you think was the problem? Details, exactly. He wasn't interested in listening to all those details, so she didn't think that they communicated well. Have you been in that boat? Now, as I said, he has got to work at this, and I just love it when, well, what's this question I told you about the first, you know? When we can get down into some of those kind of questions, and we'll really go at it. And Jeff does that with me. And I just think that that's the great thing about him. But we were counseling a couple together not terribly long ago, and they had driven up to our house and had four hours together and had really done this dissecting. She dissected her feelings about every little thing. And when they were having some problems, and when she got there, they got there, she was just on cloud nine because they had had this tremendous talk together. And so as we were chatting, the four of us, she says, now, if he would do that every day, our marriage would really be great. And I looked at her and I said, honey, if he did that every way, he'd be out of his mind. They can't take it. They really can't take it. So just remember that he sees the overall picture and you see in detail. Therefore, your tendency is to get bogged down in the details. And he can seem very cold to you because of that. He's so logical sometimes and so objective that he seems calculated to you. And sometimes when your little boy may cut his finger, he'll say, well, you know, it's bleeding. And he'll say, well, that's too bad. But he knows it's going to stop bleeding. And so he takes it rather philosophically, maybe. And here you are, thinking that this is the worst crisis in the world at the moment. And you think about him and you think, doesn't he care? Well, yes, he cares. But he sees it from a different standpoint than you see. Then you see, you've got to remember this too, that basically a man uses speech to convey facts or ideas. This is because they are logical. You use speech primarily to convey feelings or emotions. Now let me give you some for instances on this. If you and your husband go out and tonight and there's a big full moon up there, and you're looking at it and you say, isn't that the most gorgeous moon? Well, now, what are you saying, basically? I feel romantic. It makes me feel a certain way. Now, he may say, as my husband laughingly did one time, yes, it's bright enough to shoot a golf with. He was laughing. He knew what my reaction would be to that. And he uses, I think, as an example of what not to say when there's a full moon. But if it's raining outside, and you get up in the morning and you say, it's raining, well, you could be conveying any kind of emotion, but probably you're not telling your husband that it's raining. You're probably saying, that makes me feel depressed, or it makes me feel like staying in the house and cleaning, or, you know, you're saying how you feel, how it makes you feel. He thinks, yes, raindrops falling on my head. Big drops to little drops. Here they come. He's thinking facts, and you're thinking feelings. And because you're thinking feelings, and he doesn't pick that up sometimes, that's when you get mad. And when you withdraw, you start to feel lost. Also, a man, and this was really helpful to me when I discovered it, a woman thinks of her home as being an extension of her personality. Woman thinks of her home as being an extension of her personality. Therefore, when your husband doesn't do something around the house that you have asked him to do, because he's seeing the broader scope and that's 20 down in his priority, you take it personally, feeling a personal rejection on that. You feel like he has personally rejected you. Now, he doesn't think about it that way at all. And if we could remember that he doesn't, we'd be able to accept that procrastination a little bit better, I trust. And, of course, explaining to him how you feel always helps. That you don't mean to, but you are thinking it's like he's a rejection of yourself. He needs to understand this. The other side of that coin is that he takes his work. To him, his work or his ministry is an extension of his personality. And therefore, when you neglect something about his work or his ministry or entertainment that he's asked you to do, or whatever it is, he takes it as a personal rejection. So this is very important as you think through on your priority list, which, of course, if we could put it up here on our priority list, would be God first. In our relationship to him. And then our husband. And then our children. And then our homes. And then everything else. But sometimes this everything else, if our husbands have asked us to do it, that's connected with their work, has to come right up here with our husbands. And we don't think of it that way, you see, they do. Now that doesn't mean placing them in front of you before your children, or it doesn't mean every time. But it does mean that there are times when it's got to come right up there. What you do. I'm going to stop a minute here and ask the question. I can see some of your wheels are grinding away. Questions or something that you'd like to add? Yes, I think there is. I think, of course, there are varieties of women's lib, like there are varieties of everything else. There are women that call themselves women's lib in movement just simply because they want the same salary that a man gets for the same job. Well, basically, you and I would agree with that. But it varies all the way from that. But basically, women's lib, what they're saying is that there is no biological difference between a man and a woman, that it's all environment. Which is, in other words, if you were raised like a man to be aggressive and all these differences that we just talked about, that you would be like that. And we have done them a disservice in raising them to think womanhood. And we need to be strictly equal. That's their basic premise, which is the wrong premise, according to biologists and according to the Bible. So, from their basic premise, they are wrong. A lot of them don't even realize this, I think. But your ultra women's lib say that the Bible is one of the worst enemies to their cause. So, that's pretty strong.
What was the trying to change in the Bible?
Oh, they tried to change everything from God being a she. In the Bible.
Yeah.
Well, they're trying to change. Yeah, right. Everything. They think that God ought to be called she just as much as he. And there are a lot of very extreme people. But of course, some of the things that they're fighting for, you probably agree with, but they're fighting for them in a wrong basis. It's kind of like, I don't know if you saw the astronaut the write-up in Astronaut Wise, the two of the three that just got back from the moon are real Christians. And they were asked about, one of them was asked about women's lib, and she says, well, she says, I really don't know. I'm not sure what do I want to be free from? And basically that's the way I feel. I really like my role, and I feel free. And I feel very accepted. And I wouldn't want to be anything else than I am. Most of them are really unhappy females. And they're unhappy as persons, and therefore they're unhappy with their roles. Any other questions?
There's a good article
in the book
on
marriage,
and
when you meet a woman,
that women are
superior
to men at being a woman.
And cannot be women,
can't they? They make terrible mothers.
Good. Any other comments on this? Where are you going? You want to stand up? Getting tired? Sitting? These differences, I want to go into just two other areas on it. Because I think we need to do much more research on this. But some funny things, really, that you may have gotten very upset with your husband about have to do just with the fact that God made us very different physically, and I'm not talking about biological differences. God did make you to be a woman. Therefore, your arm bends differently than his. Your bone structure is different. Your arm really bends so that you can hold a baby more comfortably. A man's arm does not bend that way. For instance, a man cannot touch hands back here. I've never found one man that could touch hands back here. Now, maybe your husband is the exception to that. I'd like to know if he has... That's why they don't have shirts that zip up the back. They can't zip all the way. But your arm bends differently. Yeah. They're straight. They're not turned this way. And there are many funny things. I heard one thing that is supposed to be true. It says that a man's center of gravity is in his chest. And a woman's center of gravity is in her hip area. And that's really why you can sit longer, more comfortably than he can. And if you've ever gotten irritated with your husband because he got up and started to pace or started to wiggle in a meeting and you thought he's not listening and you get upset. That's part of it. Because a woman's fat is distributed differently than a man's. Oh, really? A female has fat over the tissues throughout her body. And she's warmer because of this. She burns up energy more economically. She loses weight harder. It's also why she has curves. Too bad. Well, you see, this, knowing these, just a few of these differences, and there are many others that we could go into, but I really want you to do some research. A couple of books that you could read that are excellent on this is this one that by Cecil Osborne, Osborne, and it's called The Art of Understanding Your Mate. The Art of Understanding Your Mate. And that's a Zondervan published. And that The Essence of Marriage that I give you has a good chapter on this, differences between men and women. Paul Tournier's To Understand Each Other is a broad picture of this. It doesn't have the specifics, but it is a broad picture of this. And then that Marriage Affair has several articles that they're mentioned by Peterson. Isn't that by Peterson? Compiled by him? Mm-hmm. And there are other books that I pick up all the articles and everything that I can read and clip just to get more light on that. And really, it has helped me in so many areas just to understand as Jack reacts differently than I do to him. And it's been feeling, yeah.
There's
Yes, I'm going to be missing that. That's a must on the list. It's on sale here. Letters to Karen by Charlie Shedd. Excellent. I know. But you see, this also has much to do with your communication, your real communication, which is one area that wives are always complaining about. That My husband and I just don't communicate. In fact, I just had a heartbreaking experience, not just a very few weeks ago, of a wife that told me, and their marriage was in real trouble. She said, I knew 5 minutes after we got married that we would never communicate. And my husband would never communicate with him. And I said, well, did you know before you were married? She says, yes, but I thought it was perfect. Well, they are. They're in deep trouble. And yet so many of us fall in love, and one of the reasons we fell in love was because we could really talk when it's different. And then I find 2, 3, 4, 5 years later, they're not talking. And they're not talking on a level that the wife really wants to talk. And there are things that we can, active things that we can do about this. But one of them really does go back to this fact that you've got to understand your husband. For instance, a preacher asked his wife one day, he said, honey, I've got to go to a funeral a couple hours away. Would you like to go with me? She waited a minute and she said, if you want me to. He said, well, I'll go alone then. Both of them were disappointed because they hadn't communicated. She did not understand the fact that a man says what he thinks. Now, how many times have you been guilty of that? You wanted that reassurance, but she wanted to. But he would not have asked her if he had not wanted her to go. She wanted reassurance, so she said, if you want me to. He took it that she didn't want to go with him. So he said, well, I'll go alone then. Now, this brings us to another topic that we need to do some thinking about, and that's the fact that women speak often in coded messages. We will go all around Robinson Farm to say what we mean, and then we get very upset that they haven't caught it. All right? Because you do that, you see, because, for instance, if I didn't like something Audrey was doing, I realized that she's going to take everything I say personally, and I don't really want to hurt her. So I could say, for instance, in a whole group like this, I could say, you know, some women talk too much. And every single one of you would think, I talk too much, because you take me personally. And so we get used to doing that and going all the way around the issue, because you're going to get it. But a man is used to hitting it right head on, aren't they? You've seen them just go to it, and you think, ooh, they'll never speak to each other again, and they're laughing and drinking coffee together. Well, they're objective, and they're used to hitting it head on. They're used to saying, speaking facts. They're not used to these coded messages. So, unless you've lived with them 22 years, and even then, sometimes not, they don't pick up your coded message. I came into my sweetheart, and he's sitting there, and I said, guess what? He said, what? And I said, everybody in our household is going to be out for dinner. And he kind of looked at me, and he grinned, and he says, I suppose that means you like to go out? And it did. And we did. But later I thought, now why did I say it that way? Why didn't I say, honey, everybody's going out. How about you and me going out for hamburgers? But do you know what? If he had not picked up my coded message, I probably would have cried in my soup as I was fixing it, and I would have said one more word. And I would have just stirred that soup and felt sorry for myself and said, he doesn't care. How stupid. And yet, I don't know, maybe you're not that way, but this is where I am. If we can ask God's wisdom in this to bring those coded messages down to the very minimum and really let our sweethearts know. See, that's part of speaking the truth in love. That's what Ephesians 4 is all about. Speaking the truth in love. So, to establish better communication, start doing a few things. First of all, you've got to establish an atmosphere of love so that your communications are really great. And one of the ways that you can do that, of course, is to tell your husband that you love him every single day. Whatever feeling. Tell him verbally. Tell him by your actions. And if he acts kind of embarrassed sometimes, don't worry about it. He loves it. Do something nice every day for him. Compliment him. At least once a day. And they can be the craziest kind of compliments you can dream of. Doesn't matter. Just compliment. At least once a day. And gals never, never fail to pass on second hand compliments. They're always the best. You hear somebody else say something. Don't ever say it. Do that. That's cardinal sin. One book I read said about men and women, to be loved and admired is important to both. But to be loved is more essential to the woman, and to be admired is more essential to the man. And I think we need to write this in blazing letters across our hearts. I heard one wife that was really old enough to know better. She said, well, doesn't that build up my husband's pride? You bet it does, and he needs it. But in the right way, it builds up his pride. You see, you get a lot of your worth as a person built up by other women who will compliment each other, by your kiddos who will come and throw their arms around you and say, oh, Mommy, you're so nice. I love you. And you are constantly being built up by this, and you don't get knocked quite as often. But men don't compliment each other that way very often. And children don't respond to their fathers quite like that as often. And so a man gets it out there in the world sometimes ways that you just never dreamed. And he needs you. That is one of the biggest ministries that you can have in your husband's life. By being a builder-upper. And of course, Proverbs is full of verses, isn't it? I'm just a good word in due season. And heaviness in the heart of man maketh it sweet, but a good word maketh it glad. And you ought to be looking for thousands of ways to do this, didn't you? Creative ways. God gave you a godly imagination for creative ways to build up your husband. And I know one gal who sent her husband a telegram when he was off at a conference. And it says, I love you madly. Yeah, he was kind of embarrassed, but he really loved it. Well, I'm not saying to send your husband a telegram when he's off at a conference. But do you ever, I haunt the card shops. And there's these funny little cards. And when Jack's away, he just got such a big kick out of one. And we've both been on diets. And you may have seen that this kind of ugly character on the front. And kind of fat, and she's saying, you can kiss me all you want to. And inside it says, I'm non-fattening. You save up these little cards and send me sick little notes in the suitcases, do you? Put them on the. I don't care what you do. You just think of ways. But let them know how much you love them and how that they are number one in your life. Whether they reciprocate it or not, or whether they act embarrassed or not, do it. Some couples have gotten the habit of slamming each other and thinking that, and we started that in our courtship because it was the thing as we were in college to kind of slam each other. And then we realized how this was hurting. And so early in our courtship days, really, we made up our mind that instead of saying, ooh, do I have to sit next to you, kind of a thing, we would turn it around. Oh, I get to sit next to you. And it made total difference as we started to cough. And I know a lot of men had the habit of calling your wife the old ball and chain and all this. And this can really get to a gal. But if every time you would say that, she would come back with a nice remark. Oh, yeah, but do I ever love being your ball and chain? You know, this kind of thing. He'd soon stop. I'll bet you he would. And start to do the same thing to her that she's doing to him. In public, always compliment it. I don't mean make a big federal case out of it. But it doesn't hurt in public to do this too. And then start saying what you mean. Clarify your statement. And keep shortcuts when he is saying something that you don't understand. By that I mean, instead of reading into what you think he's saying, acting. I remember not long ago when Jack and I were on a vacation, on a very short vacation, and the last day of it, he said, "Boy, I wish I was home right now." Well, now, what do you think my reaction to that statement was? Exactly like yours probably would have been. He wants to be home right now. He doesn't want to spend the day with me. What's going on? All this feelings. And I stopped myself short. The Lord helping me. And I just thought, now this is ridiculous. I know he doesn't really mean it the way I'm taking it. So I said, you know, I took what you said personally. And you do what I said. And I told him. And he says, I know I didn't mean it that way. I said, I know it. With one whole half of me, I know it. With that whole half of me, I took it personally. And we talked about it. And we had a great day. And sometimes they can't even explain to you because, you see, you are thinking on different wavelengths. And, of course, our constant job is to bring those wavelengths together. But you'll never come together and stay on the same wavelength because of these differences. And God didn't mean for you to. So there are times when he will explain to you, you won't get it. You won't really get what he meant. But that's when you got accepted anyhow. And you know that he meant well and you're going to accept it. For that. And accept him. And then, of course, keep him informed. About yourself, about your feelings. Never stop looking at this. Some wives give up after a while. I talked to another wife not too long ago and I said, well, you know, what areas of your communication are you working on? She says, I'm not. You never listen. And I, you know, that's kind of a hopeless picture, isn't it? Well, don't stop. Don't stop working. But of course, you pray about timing. There are things that in our marriage that well, let me put it this way. One of the most valuable pieces of advice that I was ever given concerning marriage relationship was by a very godly woman who is now with the Lord. And when I first came with Navigator, she was the first person I heard. I don't think we were with Navigator yet, but she was. And she said this. She said, whenever my husband does something that I don't like or that I disagree with, makes a decision that I feel is wrong, I do one thing. And I sat up waiting for the gem of information. She said, I pray. And I sort of sank back into my chair thinking, ooh, you've got to do more than that. Really did. Sorry. At that point in my life, I really thought that faith without hints is dead. And you had to pray. That was right. But you had to do something about it too. But she went on to explain that as you pray and really take it to the Lord, that one of three things invariably happens. It changes. God is in the business of changing people. And as we have a prayer list for our sweethearts and pray for these things, God changes these people, these men of ours. And then, of course, a little side there. I have learned, too, that many times I prayed wrong on this. for instance, in characteristics, many times I prayed that Jack would change. And what I really should have been praying is that I would adjust to him. The wives, adjust or adapt yourself to your own husband, Phillips translates Ephesians 5. And God made me a helper fit for Jack, not Jack a helper fit for me. And therefore, if I am created by the hand of God for Jack Mayhawk, why then God is certainly going to give me the ability to adjust to him in the very best, the most wonderful way possible. And that's great. So, and I've seen this work in my own life. For instance, I'm not sure I want to say by the point, but I'm probably more demonstrative outwardly than Jack is. You know, I hug and kiss a lot. And Jack isn't quite as demonstrative outwardly. Very loving person, in fact, but and for a while, I was saying, well, Lord, just make me more demonstrative. And then I realized that that was the wrong way to pray. That I needed to pray that I would really adjust to that for him. And as I prayed, the first thing I did, of course, I'm always one that I would go swinging too far when we're getting no balance. And so I thought, well, maybe I just shouldn't be demonstrative at all. And so I stopped hugging and kissing him while we were letting him around. And he asked me if I was sick. And so then we talked about it. And he says, oh, honey, don't ever change. You know, I love that about you. And you keep, I said, I'm sorry, I'm not that way, but you just go ahead. I go ahead. But this is the kind of thing. That was a character thing. And this is my adjustment to him. But then there are faults and so on that we really pray about, and these change, going back to my three little points here. So they change. Secondly, God leads them to ask you about it. In which case, it's not the heat of the moment, it's not you've thought about it, you've prayed about it, and you answer them because you are one in the sight of God. You are one. And then, of course, God has prepared their hearts for what you've got to say. Then it changes. They accept it. Thirdly, God really lays it on your heart to talk to them about it. And in which case also, you've prayed about it, their hearts are prepared, you have waited for the right time to share this thing. And I'm, of course, talking about areas of things that would be termed criticism. And this is very hard for men to accept from anybody, especially from the ones that they are closest to them, I think. Because they're hot headed, they need to be admired. And we need to build this whole climate of real admiration so that we don't want to destroy it by this one little area that we're sharing, of course. That's totally devastating. So God leads you to share with him. And the way that I determine that God really wants me to do this is when I got this thing and it's here in my heart and I prayed about it and it doesn't dissolve. It doesn't go away. But it's just a hard little rock right there in my heart. And then when it just won't dissolve, then I know that it's something God really wants me to share with you. Oh. And she shared these things and I added a fourth after I practiced them for a while, and that was the fact that more times than not, especially in the area of decision, Jack was right and I was wrong, and Jack just, I mean, the Lord changed my heart, and I didn't have to make a big deal out of it, and that was really neat, too. So this works, ladies, it really does. As we take these things, and I hope you have a prayer list for your husband of big things and little things, and I hope you have a ministry of prayer in his life, just for him. And then, of course, in this area of communication, remember that you are one. That you are one heart and one soul and one body. And that you need to really be open with him. I had one wife that said she was having difficulty because she really thought that submission, and we are to be submissive, submissive to her husband. That's her role. But she really had the idea that submission was never saying anything that you disagreed with. Your husband. That was her idea of submission. And of course, what was happening is that she was about to erupt. And he didn't want that. He told her he didn't want that. But that's what she thought submission was. And of course, I think you realize that submission is an attitude before it can act. It's an attitude of heart. He's running the show. He's driving the car. And I want him to. And he's the boss. But that has nothing to do with the fact that we're not one, that we don't share, that, well, that's a whole other subject that we don't have time to get into.